Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Trudy Fraser, Honorary Research Fellow in the School of Historical and Philosophical Studies at the University of Melbourne. This is episode CLVII, Domitia. Domitia was a princess of the Julio-Claudians who caught the attention of a young Domitian. As Augusta, she kept a low profile and managed to survive and thrive across three imperial dynasties. Here's Trudy Fraser.
Domitia Longina was Empress of Rome. She had a very interesting background because we consider her to be the last of the Julio-Claudians. We're not absolutely sure who her mother was, but she certainly came from the Cassii and the Longina. That's why she has the added name of Longina. That was from her maternal family. She's got the Domitia from her father, of course.
Mm.
And it was for this reason that Domitian was so interested in marrying her. Of course, he did have affairs with quite a number of married women in the Alban villa that he had. His father, Vespasian, wasn't keen at the beginning, but then when he realized what Domitia could bring into the family, which was not just her illustrious pedigree from her maternal side, but also the military exploits of her father.
All right, so can we start then with explaining her pedigree then? Pedigree sounds like I'm talking about a dog. Sorry, but explaining who her family was.
The Cassii.
The Cassii. What is that family? You refer to them as the last of the Julio-Claudians.
Yes. Well, because most of them had died out by then, we think that Domitia was the last, the most recognizable one anyway, to be the last.
And her father was Corbulo, so he was a general.
Yes. Domitius Corbulo was a general under Nero, a very effective one, and a governor of Cappadocia, Galatia, and of Syria.
Mm.
So he had quite a prestigious position. And unfortunately, he was forced to commit suicide by Nero, who was becoming very jealous of him because he was so popular in the East. And then, of course, his son-in-law, who was married to his first daughter, was very upset by the deaths of his other relatives that Nero had forced because of the Piso conspiracy. And he plotted against Nero, and of course he was put to death. And this reflected badly on Domitius Corbulo, who was in the East anyway at the time, but Nero forced him to fall on his sword.
Right.
It was much better for Domitius Corbulo to do that than to be executed or assassinated by Nero, because by committing suicide, he actually preserved his property for his children.
Mm. But as a result of this and the son-in-law's actions, I guess, you've got a kind of disgraced family.
Yes, for the time being. And I think that possibly life was quite precarious for Domitia at that stage because so many of her close friends and relatives had been killed or exiled, even her grandfather. But he came back, you see. He came back under Vespasian, so all was well there. But those early years for Domitia, I think, were a tremendous learning curve for her because she realized how precarious life could be and that you needed to have the favor of the emperor if you were going to live. I think of what she suffered and what she experienced before she was 14. These days, we would be very, very worried about children who had seen so many of their close friends and relatives killed. We would wonder what the effect on them would be for their life. And I think for Domitia, it made her extremely cautious.
Let's go to her first marriage, which is
yes,
the main kind of thing that we know about her youth, I guess.
Yes. Well, her father, I'm sure, he organized that marriage. She was certainly betrothed to him before her father died.
Mm.
And so the marriage went ahead, even if it hadn't already gone ahead before her father died.
So this is Aelius Lamina, married sometime before 70 CE.
Yes, possibly in about 68, he married her. And she had a child. Then she was introduced to Domitian because the families knew one another anyway.
Okay.
That's when she came to his attention. Apparently he was absolutely smitten by her and wanted to have her.
At this point, Domitian is a young prince, if I can call him that.
Yes, he's 19 years of age. Mm. And his father had been trying to persuade him to marry Titus's daughter, Julia, and sort of keep it in the family. But she was only six. And here was a young, virile man of 19, mm. and he was looking at a six-year-old, and then he was looking at Domitia at 17, and Domitia was very much more attractive.
I don't often say this, but good Domitian, good.
Yes.
So he manages to persuade Vespasian.
Well, he persuaded Vespasian, and of course Vespasian didn't need too much persuasion because he knew Corbulo's reputation as a great general, mm-hmm. and that was bringing that prestige into his family. And of course then the background of the Julia Claudians from her maternal side, so he was quite happy. The only one who probably wasn't consulted was Domitia herself.
Because, oh, well, why would you?
Yes, so it was Aelius Lamina that had to be persuaded.
Okay.
And as we know, later on when Titus said to him, why don't you remarry, he said to Titus, well, do you need a wife as well?
Right, so he's losing his wife.
He lost his wife.
To Domitian.
Mm. Mm.
Why? Sorry, this is just loaded with terrible language, but why didn't Titus get first dibs on Domitian?
Because Titus was in the East still.
Okay.
He hadn't come back to Rome. And anyway, he was very much involved with Berenice, the Jewish princess.
Mm.
I think it was a real love affair because he was reluctant to let her go and he brought her twice to Rome, but it didn't work out and Vespasian finally said, that's it, you know.
Mm. Mm. But in the meantime...
Domitian married. He married Domitia before Titus came back to Rome. So he married her in 70.
So he very much had his heart set on that, so
he was very much set on it, yes.
Mm. Mm. So Domitia and Domitia do have a child.
Yes, they have a boy, young boy. We don't know exactly how old he was when he died because the coins show him both as a baby and as a small boy.
Mm.
So we're not sure, but there is some thought that showing him as a baby is the closest thing you can do to showing him as a heroic nude, which you can't with a child.
Mm.
Then, of course, all the heavens are indicated there because when the coins were actually minted, which was after Domitian became emperor and the child had died before then, the child had been deified, and so there was this tremendous link between a god in heaven helping the dynasty.
Mm.
It was extremely important for the average person in the street to see that from the coins. Those that couldn't read could see that.
So Domitian becomes emperor in 81 CE.
Yes, after his brother dies.
Yeah. At that point, how do things change for Domitia?
I'm not sure that she ever expected to become the wife of an emperor, because it looked as though Titus might reign for quite a long time. And of course, he did die young, and we're not sure whether it was of natural causes. Some people seem to think that he might have been poisoned. And of course, Vespasian had organized a marriage for Titus's daughter, Julia. She was betrothed to her cousin. Titus, when he became emperor, not in undue haste, he made his daughter Augusta. Domitian, I feel, reacted to this quite strongly because as soon as he became emperor, within 2 weeks, with now undue haste, he made Domitia Augusta.
Mm.
So coins were minted, beautiful coins were minted, actually. That's when he made his son a god and minted coins to show her as the mother of the god, so connecting her with the Flavian heaven.
That's quite a title to get, really, I guess. Augusta, wife of the emperor, mother
of
the god.
She is supposed to be the only living empress to have received that title, or at least the first.
Mm. What expectations were there on Domitia? There would have been expectations to deliver an heir, wouldn't there?
Well, that was the major thing. One thing that we don't have any record of is miscarriages. Mm. We have no idea of that. And it's something that I've often thought about with a lot of the other imperial women too. But so much was expected of Domitia because her father's mother, Vestilia, had married six times and managed to have seven children. Among these was only one daughter, Melania Cassonia, and she had become the fourth wife of Caligula, and she had lost her life when he was assassinated by the Praetorian Guard.
Wow.
And her child, their child, had its brains dashed out by the Praetorian Guard, and Domitia would have always known and been aware of this, and that being the wife of an emperor wasn't actually as safe as you would think it might be.
So that's the family experience that she's come from.
Such a lot of loss that she experienced as a young child and knew about, and I think affected her whole life.
So there would have been pressure, and she did have a child with Domitian who died.
Yes.
And potentially a child before that.
Yes.
So there is the knowledge that she can have children.
Yes.
And the pressure to continue the imperial dynasty.
Yes. I think that that lasted quite a long time, right up until probably, I think it was in 91, when Domitian finally adopted his cousin's children as his heirs. They must have finally realized by that stage that Domitia wasn't going to have any children.
Now, part of what I'm going to take the conversation in the direction of gets into gossip.
Oh, right, gossip, yes.
And I do want to talk about hostile historians at some point, just maybe a little bit later. But her exile, we're told that she's exiled.
Yes, well, actually, I don't believe that she was exiled in that she wasn't sent far away from Rome. She didn't go far away from Rome. We're judging a lot of this on the fact that her coinage stopped at that time and didn't resume until a bit later. And we know that it is said by Suetonius that she was recalled to the imperial bed. I think that it was the time when her husband, her first husband, was executed. And maybe there was some bad feeling there because he was executed for nothing bad, just making jokes, in fact. Domitian was very thin-skinned, as you know, that he did execute a playwright later on for writing some kind of satire that he didn't approve of. But I think she was very upset about her husband, and it could be that she just went out of Rome for a while. She had villas all over the place, and so did her father, and she may have gone to Gabii or somewhere like that and then gone back to Rome. Anyway, it wasn't long lasting. I think when she came back, she was hailed as Domina, which was seen to be a good sign, and that perhaps Domitian was trying to make amends. You see, he was a bit of a complex character, Domitian. Although he'd had all these wild parties and affairs with married women when he was a young man, then he decided that he was going to actually revive Augustus's law, the Lex Julius. So suddenly he was a very moral man, very strict ideas about how people should behave. And we have to understand that he made this change, and therefore some of the rumours about Domitia having an affair with an actor, Paris, very strange. And particularly as it's actually just an echo of a previous Domitia having an affair with an actor, Paris, same name. I mean, can't be just a coincidence. I think they're just rehashing that idea.
Yeah, I spotted the name Paris coming up again, and I thought, two actors with the same kind of name.
I mean, you know, it's just bizarre. And the fact is, if you look at Domitia and her life and what she's observed and seen, you know, how people can be exiled or assassinated for just trivial things, she certainly wasn't going to put herself in a position of being exiled or assassinated for having an affair with an actor. And remember, she was descended, you know, from the Cassii, and they were, according to Ronald Syme, proud and unbending. And I'm sure that she would have thought that it was extremely demeaning to have an affair with an actor. Doesn't fit in with the rest of what we know about Domitia.
So this is in Suetonius, but I've also got a Dio quote, if I could read this out, because this has got a bit more detail. This is Dio 67:3. He being Domitian, planned to put his wife Domitia to death on the grounds of adultery, but having been dissuaded by Ursus, who is, a bear friend, he divorced her after murdering Paris the actor in the middle of the street because of her.
Mm.
And when many persons paid honour to that spot with flowers and ointments, he ordered that they too should be slain because, you know, Domitian. Mm. After this, he lived with his own niece, Julia, that is to say, as husband with wife, making little effort at concealment. Then upon the demands of the people, he became reconciled with Domitia, but continued his relations with Julia nonetheless. Can you tell me about this part of it here from your perspective, what's going on with Julia?
I'll just go back to the bit about the actor. He could only kill him if he actually saw them in the sexual act.
Legally,
under the law. Having him killed in the street was not something that was the right thing to do. Also, under the law, he wouldn't have taken back a wife who had committed adultery. He had either exiled or killed one of the other people at court for doing just that, and he wouldn't have done that. And as far as Julia is concerned, well, I actually don't think that he had an affair with Julia.
So this is Julia, his niece.
His niece. I don't think that he did.
Mm.
It just doesn't fit with this new moral code that he lives by. And that's why later on when she dies, and it's said that she died as a result of an abortion, I don't think that that would have happened. First of all, at that time, he was away from Rome. He was far away in Germany, actually. And he couldn't have fathered a child then.
Mm.
And the other reason is that had he realized that she was pregnant, he might have tried very hard to make the whole thing legal and marry her in the same way as Claudius had married Denise.
Mm.
And so that the heir would be legitimate. I just think the whole rumor is just a little bit dicey. And we know that in her years of marriage, Julia had not conceived or not born a healthy child.
So the thing that makes me kind of pause about it, or at least think that it was a contemporary rumor,
yes,
is that, sure, the historians talk about it in their gossipy way, but we also have a mention of it in a letter from Pliny the Younger. This is letter 4:11. He calls out Domitian for being a hypocrite for executing the Vestal Cornelia for incest when Domitian himself is guilty of it.
Yes, I'm very glad that you mentioned that. Of course, they were very angry with Domitian for his treatment of the Vestal Virgins, as Martha Vinson has written very well. The best way to get back at an emperor and to really criticize him was through the women, and to make them look bad in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these stories were made up. Suetonius was a great gossip anyway, and he loved a story. And Dio was writing many, many decades later. So you can't be sure of what his sources were. We only have an epitome of his work anyway.
Mm. Can I, just for the sake of completeness, probably not completeness, but also quote Juvenal?
Yes.
Okay, this is Juvenal 2:29:33 in the Satires. Exactly so was the adulterer of more recent times, defiled by a union worthy of tragedy, who tried to revive bitter laws to terrify everyone, even Venus and Mars, at the very moment when his Julia was unsealing her fertile womb, bit creepy, Juvenal, with numerous abortion-induced and pouring out lumps which resembled her uncle.
Yes.
Classy guy, that guy.
Well, what can you say?
Mm. It seems like a widespread rumour.
Well, the rumours were a wonderful way of criticising the emperor. They were very angry with him over his treatment of the Vestal Virgins.
Domitia returns to the palace in 84 CE. What is her role and what sort of palace is she living in then?
She's living with a man who's becoming more and more paranoid, of course, and which can't have been easy for her. But certainly as far as she is concerned, her image is changing because she now has her second portrait type is actually created. And it shows a very much more mature woman. Her portraits are extremely interesting because they are such a change from all the previous imperial women. They tended very much to have flat curls around their foreheads, loose sort of ringlets. It's very difficult to describe. But Domitia's hair, I believe, was extremely curly. So suddenly we have lots of curls around the forehead. And then the hair is plaited in thin plaits from behind this frontal mass of curls. And in the early portraits, it's not so great, and the hair is taken to the nape of the neck and bound there. But now, in this period of time that you're just asking me about, the portraits change. She becomes a more mature woman. All these little plaits, thin plaits, are drawn up into a chignon. And for the first time, we see her with a diadem. The frontal curls are more pronounced, and she has a definite V above her forehead. So we've got a change in her portraits. And interestingly enough, Giulia Titti copies this. Now, I don't think that Giulia Titti had the same curly hair as Domitia, because we have some portraits of her from Copenhagen which show her with just wavy hair, quite loose. And so either she and all the other aristocratic women in the court who want to do the same thing are using wigs or spending a lot of time with curling tongs. Domitian also organizes more coins to be issued. I think he was very aware of the rumors about the palace. The coins do stress things about both Giulia Titti and Domitia, and that is Concordia. So harmony in the imperial household. And Domitia's coins show her as pietas, which is devotion and duty to the state, to the family, and to the emperor. So I think she's still got quite a strong position.
Is that in an effort to give her a title that isn't like, you know, mother of something, because she isn't continuing the imperial dynasty herself, do you think?
I think at this stage there's still hope that she might have a child, but that's diminishing.
Let's move on to Domitian's death.
Yes.
And can you tell me about that from the perspective of Domitia, who is implicated by the historians as being aware of it, if not influencing it a little?
Yes, I think that she would have been extremely careful not to implicate herself too much in this conspiracy to kill Domitian. However, I do think that with all her contacts, and remember she's got a lot of contacts through her father's enormous family. He had all those brothers and they married maybe several times and had a lot of children. She had tremendous support. She would have known that perhaps something was going on, but the rumor that she had a list of people that Domitian kept it on a board under his pillow and she was aware of that, I don't think so. I don't think that he could have slept with a whiteboard under his pillow anyway.
So he has Santa style, a naughty list.
Yes.
And she gets a hold of it, gives it to one of her servants, freedmen.
I don't think so.
Who is a member of the conspiracy. And that's how those people kind of go, oh, we should take care of Domitian first.
Yes.
So
yes.
No.
I don't think so. It was too risky for her.
Yes.
Much too risky for her. Because people who were implicated in his assassination were actually killed later by Nerva. He was persuaded to kill them. Now, Nerva, the next emperor, now he did not do anything with Domitia. In actual fact, she retained her status. She retained all her land. She retained her title of Augusta. She probably didn't live in Rome. She probably went to one of her villas to live, but she certainly did not suffer.
And Domitian was damned.
Damnatio memoriae, so everything.
A big thing to survive.
Yes, and we know from the coins in the East, some have survived, which show Domitian and Domitia's portraits on the coin, and Domitian's portrait has been erased, and his titles, and Domitia remains. So it's very interesting. And one coin is definitely from Smyrna and the other from Cybria.
Yeah.
So
far enough away for it to be, you know, unconnected.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, well, it's just interesting, and you only need one bit of evidence to know that, you know, this is probably how a lot of other people felt too.
Yeah. So what was her life like post-Domitian? Does she retain the title of Augusta?
Yes, she does. Of course, we know that she was very close with the Trajanic women. She knew them quite well, particularly Marciana. She would have retained a good relationship with them.
Marciana being Trajan's sister?
Marciana was Trajan's sister, yes, and Plotina. And remember that these women were from not such an aristocratic background. They were very nice women. They were gentle women. And they would have been very pleased to have somebody of Domitia around, I would think, to actually show them what to do and help them. I'm sure that there was good relationships there. And the third type of portrait that we have of Domitia shows us that this was so, because it's a colossal portrait, and colossal portraits are only done of the imperial family. Mm. And here we have a colossal portrait of an older Domitia. We're pretty sure that it was destined for the Forum of Trajan, where he had all these portraits of the women.
Mm.
So, and it's not the only one. There's a bust in Copenhagen showing her with the same hairstyle.
Mm.
Domitia's portraits are very easy to recognize because she has such a definite square jaw, as well as her hairstyle, of course, and widely spaced eyes and a smallish mouth, particularly on gems that you have to look at very closely because they're so small. It's sometimes hard to see the difference.
Yeah. So she managed to keep a good amount of income as well, didn't she?
Yes. Well, she owned brickworks, which were a source of considerable income for her, quite close to Rome, so a lot of building was going on. And of course she kept the lands and the villas that she had before her marriage, and she kept the land that was given to her by Domitian.
Probably outlived Domitian by about 30 years, making her about 80 by the time of her death.
Yes, we think that she died somewhere around 128, and the fact is that the emperor at that time was Hadrian, and he and Sabina had probably set off for the east on their last great journey. And there has been a question of why wasn't she deified like the other?
That was my next question.
Yes. Well, the request has to come from the emperor to the Senate for the deification. It's not his decision. It is Hadrian now. And I think that he just had many other things on his plate as he was journeying to the east, even if he had wanted to do it. But he didn't have such a great relationship with the Senate, as you know. And it took Antoninus Pius quite some time to persuade them to deify Hadrian when he died.
Mm.
So Julia Titi, therefore, was the last of the Flavians to join the Flavian heaven.
Ah, yeah, that's definitely one way to look at it. So there was a tablet found in Gabii, and it records the dedication of a temple around 140 in the memory of Domitia Augusta.
Yes.
So that shows that she's still remembered quite.
Yes. Well, I think she was a great benefactor for the town anyway, and she obviously left enough money to have the temple built because it was dedicated in 140, and I think she was already dead by then.
They've got a festival.
Festival on her birthday.
To celebrate her birthday, 11th of February, every year.
Yes, that's right.
With the distribution of food.
Mm.
Financed by one of the empress's freedmen and his wife, Polycarpus and Europe.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Mm. Yes, so her freedmen. So she left enough money for that to be done.
All right. So I've got two questions to finish up then. The first one is the historical sources, i.e. Suetonius, Dio, etc., don't seem to be the best way to learn about Domitia and to know anything substantial about her life. And you talked a lot about portraiture and coins in this, so they seem to be the more accurate way to build up a picture of her.
Yes, well, we have to always be thankful for what we have in the way of the ancient sources, and we have to look at them all very carefully and glean what we can from them. But what is in stone and in metal is much more accurate because it's portraying them as they were at the time. I just find that you can glean quite a lot from analysing what's going on from her portraiture and from the coins. The iconography is very revealing. They're also what the emperor wants the people to know. Yes. So the legends, of course, can only be read by the literate, but the mass in the street, you know, can see how their emperor feels about his wife.
Sorry, I've got one more half question before I go to my last question. You said that there was a massive portrait, not massive.
Colossal. The last one.
Where is that now?
It's quite interesting that it shows her as Hera. It was found in Ostia in a Hadrianic building.
Yeah.
The fact that it was in a Hadrianic building shows that it was still quite revered at that time. And it being colossal, of course, only the imperial family had colossal portraits.
And where is it now?
It was taken from Ostia to the Lateran Museum.
How do you think of Domitia when you compare her to the other Roman empresses and the other Augusta?
I think of her as being a very strong woman with a lot of the same qualities as her grandmother, whom I've mentioned already, Vestilia. I think that her traumatic childhood really influenced her, and I have to admire her because she carried on her life with a considerable amount of dignity, and you can see that through her portraiture. And I think she was married to an extremely difficult man and survived him.
Which is no short feat. Yeah.
Quite amazing, yeah. Yes. She was quite a force in her own way, but she always conducted herself, I'm sure, with dignity. And that's why she survived his assassination, because had she been another Messalina or Agrippina, she would have been directly involved.
That's Dr. Trudy Fraser, Honorary Fellow in the School of Historical and Philosophical Studies at the University of Melbourne, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Please leave a review, they are always very appreciated. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter. I am at Nightlight Guy, and Emperors of Rome is at Rome Podcast. That's it today for Emperors of Rome. In the next episode, we will continue learning about imperial women as we look at the empresses Plotina and Sabina. Until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.